If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Well, 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 welcome back, my fellow campers. Tonight's terrifying story is about this man who discovers this cave after some big corporation leaves town, after it's been there for 2 years on this private property land area, right? So he goes to explore, but he comes to find out that the cave is still occupied. But the question is not by who, but by what. Make sure to follow on the Spotify, leave a comment, join the Patreon for the visual experience. There's different tiers and also a free version for periodic posts for that as well. Anyways, enjoy the story and have a good night. Ashen Blade Industries pulled out of Coldwater Junction after apparent budget cuts. 3 solid days of flatbeds moving heavy equipment. And for a while, the town's only convenience store kept running out of coffee by 10 in the morning from all the driver traffic. People stood outside watching the trucks go. After a certain point, the pattern of it started to feel less like a corporate withdrawal and more like an excavation, though I didn't think anyone would have said that out loud. When the truck stopped and the roads cleared, and the fencing on the east parcels, land ABI had been sitting on for close to 2 years without doing anything visibly useful with it, stayed in place. Nobody came to take it down. After 4 or 5 days, people started walking past the post signs as if they had stopped reading them. I found the caves 3 weeks after any of that happened, running a line of trail camera checks on a ridge behind the Halverson property. I was covering a stretch I hadn't fully worked that season, watching the ground the way you do on limestone terrain where the surface drops without warning. And in a section where the shelf runs close to the surface, I nearly stepped into a horizontal slot in the rock. I stopped and crouched and put my hand near the opening and felt air moving outward. I marked the GPS coordinates and kept walking. The whole thing took maybe 2 minutes. For the next 2.5 weeks, I thought about it more than I thought about most things. Caves with outward moving air had depth. Depth that didn't show on the survey maps of that area. And I'd walked that ridge for years. If the slot had always been there and I had missed it, I'd been paying the wrong kind of attention. If it was newer, there were other questions. The reason I waited was practical. The land around the entrance sat inside the boundary ABI had staked out. Orange plastic stakes at intervals, posted signs with their corporate seal, and the standard authorized access language. They hadn't fenced that far back into the ridge, but they've been running ATV patrols along the boundary. Had seen their contractors out that direction twice while working cameras. And I didn't want to be found on staked land by a company with active security on the payroll. The conversation would have gone badly in several directions. So I waited. When the truck stopped and the enforcement went with them, I gave it 1 additional week. Patience has practical applications, and I wasn't sure yet what I was moving into. Nobody circled back for missed equipment. Nobody restaked the boundary. On a Saturday morning in mid-October, I loaded a bag before 7 and drove out to the Halverson property. Headlamp with some fresh batteries and a spare set sealed in a Ziploc. 30 feet of static rope coiled and clipped to the outside of the pack. Water, food, a hand-drawn copy of the GPS mark, a folding knife on my belt. Nothing specialized. My plan was a single assessment. Depth, stability, what kind of formation I was dealing with. If it warranted a second trip, I'd come back with more gear and someone who knew the cave work. If it warranted a second trip, I'd come back with more gear and someone who knew cave work. The hike to the ridge took about 40 minutes. Dry trail. Thinning canopy from the turning leaves. Morning light coming through in patches. October had settled over the whole area, quiet and slightly brittle. The year already in the process of winding down. I watched the ground as I climbed. That part of the ridge drops suddenly along the limestone edges if you're looking at the tree line instead of your footing. The slot was exactly where I had marked it. The entrance was roughly 30 inches at its widest and about 24 inches tall. A horizontal slot, low enough that I had to go flat to clear it. I pulled my pack off, pushed it through ahead of me, and followed on my stomach. The limestone overhang dragged across my jacket between my shoulder blades as I came through. On the other side, I could crouch without my head touching rock, and I stayed low for a moment while my headlamp adjusted to the new geometry. The smell was the first real input. Mineral, cool. The specific dry-wet mixture from enclosed limestone that's been accumulating moisture for a long time. My headlamp found walls close on both sides. Pale gray-brown rock with iron staining in vertical lines from water tracking down over years. The floor sloped downward at roughly 15 to 25 degrees. Loose grit and small stones over bedrock. Wet enough to compact, but not so wet that it shifted. I tested my first few steps carefully, keeping my weight back. The slope ran about 25 feet before it leveled into the first chamber. The ceiling came up as I descended, so by the time I had reached the level ground, I could stand upright with clearance. The chamber was maybe 12 feet at its widest, ceiling between 7 and 8 feet at the highest point. The air here was several degrees cooler, from somewhere above and to my left. A drip, irregular, quiet. I put the light on the ceiling and found a crack running across it, maybe 3 inches wide at its widest point. Dark with moisture along its edges. Ground seeped from the surface, working its way down through the shelf. I stood still for about a minute and let the cave tell me what it was. Sound moved with the tight, short echo. Not much room for it to develop. The drip landed with a sound that placed it closer than the ceiling geometry should have allowed. I found that as a calibration point. Sound in here ran slightly ahead of its source. 3 passages out of the first chamber. The entrance slope I had come down. 2 more ahead. A straight continuation at roughly the same ceiling height. And to the left a passage that had dropped and narrowed, with different air quality moving out of it. The left passage had an outward air movement. The straight one was still. I took the straight passage for practical reasons. The left one would require a crawl I couldn't access from where I was standing, and I wasn't going to commit to unknown tight spaces without knowing my exit first. 2 spots of the straight passage where the ceiling had fractured and lowered required me to duck without snagging my pack. The floor changed over the length of the passage from loose grit to packed silt with some damp to it. The kind of surface that holds a boot print clearly. My footsteps left clean impressions going in. I checked once over my shoulder out of habit. The grade continued downward at a gentler angle than the entrance slope. By step count and grade estimate, I was somewhere between 160 and 200 feet in when the straight passage opened into the second chamber. The dripping sound had stopped. I registered that about 30 seconds after it happened. It had been a constant presence since I came through the entrance, and at some point in the second passage, it had dropped below the threshold of hearing. Physically reasonable, distance and intervening rock. The specific quality of its absence still had a weight to it that physics don't fully account for. I stood in the passage and listened back towards the first chamber. Complete silence from that direction. Then I kept moving. The second chamber was larger than the first. My light didn't reach the far end of the wall when I stepped in, and I had to sweep the beam in sections to build the picture. Roughly oval, maybe 20 feet across at the widest point, ceiling high enough that the headlamp lost confidence before it found solid rock. The walls were wetter here, with calcite deposits building up along the lower sections from mineral-rich water running down for a long time. Towards the center of the floor, there was a shallow depression where water had pooled and eventually evaporated, leaving a thin white mineral crust, brittle-looking, completely undisturbed. I set my pack down against the near wall and looked at the space without moving through it. Three potential passages onward. Two in the far wall and one to the right that looked more like a crack than an opening. The rope I had wouldn't be enough to go further without knowing what I was getting into. My step count put me at roughly 200 feet from the entrance. I was looking at the right side crack when I noticed the footing. Loose grit on a cave floor stays disturbed when you move through it. Boot print and displacement, it doesn't settle back.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
On my way through the second chamber, I'd kicked some gravel about two-thirds along and watched it scatter across the silt. When I looked back at the passage mouth from the far end of the chamber, one small cluster had moved a few inches from where I remembered it settling. I could have been misremembering. People misjudge small spatial details and unfamiliar enclosed spaces all the time. And cave surfaces have a sameness that makes recall unreliable. I made a note of it and moved on. Then I set my boot down on a flat section of the silt floor and produced a quiet scuff. Dry. Brief. About 5 seconds later, from somewhere behind me, I heard nearly the same sound. The delay was far too long for the echo mechanics of a space this size. The pitch was also slightly lower than my original. Not enough that I would have caught it on a single hearing, enough that I caught it when I was comparing the two. I stood still. Held the light level. Nothing moved in my sight line. I clicked the headlamp off and stood in the dark. Counting to 20. The silence in those 20 seconds was complete. Everything I have been hearing had stopped. When I turned the light back on, The chamber was the same. I changed direction without announcing it. Cut left towards a low limestone outcrop I had noted on the way in, moving without scraping the wall or dislodging anything. From the outcrop, I turned back and looked across the chamber. The silt around my pack was undisturbed. From the left passage, back in the first chamber, the one with the moving air, the one I hadn't taken, I heard a single drip. One impact, then silence. I'd been inside about 25 minutes. I picked up my pack and stood at the second passage mouth and ran through the rationalizations. Old limestone drips on irregular schedules. Sound in enclosed spaces doing things it shouldn't. Grit that moves if you misjudge a step. Some of it explainable if you push hard enough. Maybe. The 5-second delay with the pitch shift wasn't accounted for by any of it. And I was aware of that before I had finished the thought. I repositioned to the junction between the straight passage and the first chamber, standing where I had a sight line on both forward passages. Several minutes had passed since I had heard anything. From the left passage, two sounds, space like a slow, deliberate step, then nothing. The interval between them was too even, too consistent for water finding its way through rock. I watched the left passage opening and waited. Nothing came through it. I moved to the center of the first chamber to get a line of sight on the straight passage as well. After a pause, I counted it roughly 4 seconds. Something shifted from deep in the straight passage. A low sound, closer to the sensation of pressure changing than anything I could name with precision. There, and then gone. Ahead of me and behind me in sequence. Nothing visible through either opening. I sat down, pack off against the wall. Headlamp on the left passage. I wanted to know what happened when I stopped following the sound, whether it adjusted. The adjustment came after 4 minutes of silence. The two sounds from the left passage again, and this time they were closer. I had not moved towards them. I held the light on the opening and I did not look away. Whatever was producing those sounds stopped short of the passage frame, and the quality of what I could perceive through the gap changed. There is a difference between an empty passage and a passage with something standing very still at its far end. And that difference is perceptible even when you don't have visual confirmation of it. You know it through your skin before your eyes have a chance to confirm anything. I perceived it. I clicked my light off again and counted 30. When I turned it back on, I looked at the lower edge of the left passage frame. A wet smear on the limestone. Dark. Irregular. The kind of mark something leaves when it brushes a surface close to the floor while moving slowly. I had not been near that passage. I had not touched that wall. The mark was new. I picked up my pack and stood up and was done rationalizing. There is a stretch of the next 15 minutes or so that I can reconstruct but cannot make feel sequential the way most memories do. I crossed the first chamber and started up the entrance slope. My step count from the chamber to the crawl-through had been consistent on the way in. I'd run it at 2 different paces and gotten the same number. On the way out, I walked the same grade at the same pace, and came to the crawl through after far more steps than either count had predicted. Far enough over that the discrepancy didn't sit in the range of counting sloppily or paying less attention. Everything was where it was supposed to be. The iron staining on the walls, the ceiling crack, the scattered gravel from my earlier kick, still in the position it had settled. Each landmark present and correctly located, and the distance between them not matching what my legs were telling me it should be. I stood at the top of the entrance slope and ran my light over each wall twice, landmark by landmark, verifying. I put my hand on the iron staining, cold, slightly damp, completely real. I looked back down the slope and then at the crawl-through frame directly in front of me and spent a moment just confirming they were both there simultaneously, trying to find where the measurements were wrong, but that was easier to hold on to than the other option. From the second passage below me came a sound. The dry scuff of my boot on slit from where I'd left the chamber, arriving now as if the cave had been holding it. My legs went back down the entrance slope. I caught myself at the bottom with the full recognition that I had gone the wrong direction, standing in the first chamber facing the second passage again, back towards the space I had spent several minutes trying to leave. I stopped moving, made myself look at the slope, made myself identify which direction the ceiling crack was running relative to my position. Up was the direction I needed, and I went up, one step at a time, with my attention fully on my own feet. From behind me, from somewhere in the first chamber, weight settled into the air. Mass in the space that had not been there a moment before. I did not turn around to verify it. I went up the slope faster than the footing already supported, and when I reached the crawl through, I went head first without pulling my pack off first. The pack caught the overhang and yanked me hard back into the slot. I went flat in the entrance passage, face pointed towards the outside, pack snagged somewhere above my shoulder blades, and I reached back with one hand and worked at the snag by feel. The cave opening was behind me. I did not look back into it. Somewhere between 30 and 35 seconds of working the pack free, and then it came loose, and I got through. My hands hit open ground. The temperature shifted. Cave air behind me. October morning ahead. And something grabbed my left ankle and pulled me backwards 8 inches before it let go. I scrambled forward and turned around in one motion. The entrance slot was empty. I pulled up my pant leg and looked. Clean skin, nothing forming. The grip had registered completely. Individual pressure points through the fabric, deliberate, measured. And it had left exactly nothing behind. I sat in the dirt outside the entrance with my light on the slot and stayed there. My hands had started shaking at some point, and I held my knees and I let it run and kept the light on the opening. The dripping sound that had been audible from outside the entrance when I arrived was no longer coming through. Sound had been traveling outward before I went in. Now, it had stopped. Something had changed inside and not outside. I thought about the timing. The grab had come when I was already through. Hands on open ground. Temperature shifted. Technically outside. It could have happened when I was flat on my stomach in the passage. Pack caught. Face 6 inches from open air in a position where I couldn't have responded to much. That window had lasted 30 to 40 seconds. The grab came after I was already through and moving. 8 inches of backward movement, then release. My boot's sole had skidded in the grit, and the drag mark was on the left heel when I had checked it. The grip had been calibrated. I know how much force it takes to move someone's leg 8 inches, and I know what an uncalibrated grip feels like, and what had grabbed me had understood the difference. It knew how much force was appropriate. It knew what it was holding and what that thing could take. I sat outside that entrance for close to 15 minutes. I needed to think before I moved. From the beginning, in sequence. The drip that stopped while I was in the second passage. The boot scuff with the 5-second delay in the pitch shift. The grit that had moved. Sounds placed ahead of me while I was moving forward, then behind me when I stopped moving. 2 sounds from the left passage that came closer when I sat down rather than followed. The smear on the wall frame. The entrance slope distance stretching while the landmarks stayed correct. The direction my legs went without consent. My own boot scuff arriving out of sequence from somewhere behind me. The weight that had settled into the air while I was climbing. And then the grip, measured, 8 inches, and the release. Separate from each other, some of those things had explanations. Taken as a sequence, they had a shape. The sounds had been placed to direct my movement in specific directions. Ahead of me when I was stationary, behind me when I moved. When I sat down instead of followed, the approach changed from auditory to physical, and the source came closer. When I turned my light off, it moved to the wall frame. When I tried to leave, it made the distance wrong. When my legs went the wrong direction, there was weight behind me in the chamber. Every piece was a response to what I had just done. Tracking, adjustment, adaptation, and then the final contact when I technically made it out. The timing of the grab was the part I couldn't stop returning to. It had all the access it needed while I was flat in the passage, stuck face down in a position where a grab would have been difficult to counter. It waited. The grab came when I was through, when I had cleared the entrance and was moving away. And it was 8 inches, and then nothing. A controlled, calibrated conclusion to a sequence that had been running for the better part of an hour. I thought about the full length of the interaction. The sounds had been moved around me in a deliberate pattern. When I stopped responding to one stimulus, the approach changed. When I sat down for 4 minutes, the source closed distance instead of increasing volume. When I turned my light off repeatedly, it used the dark to reposition. It had been adjusting to my responses continuously, which meant it had been reading my responses continuously, which meant it had been watching me from a point early enough that the adjustments were building on each other. The grab at the end wasn't an attack. An animal attacks when cornered, or when prey is within range and conditions are right. What grabbed me at the entrance had been operating under conditions that were right for longer than 8 inches of pull. It had been in that position through the whole time I was working the pack free, and it had waited. 8 inches and release. The last point of data in the sequence had been running since I came through the entrance slot. I thought about what kind of thing runs that kind of sequence. What purpose the sequence served. I didn't arrive at an answer. I arrived at the understanding that something had spent a significant amount of time making sure it understood me completely before it decided what to do with me. And the decision it had reached was release. ABI had been on that land for 2 years. Perimeter patrols, posted signs. a boundary that reached further back into the ridge than any visible resource site required, extending exactly as far as the limestone shelf where a slot in the rock sat undisturbed. Whether the perimeter was built around the cave specifically, or whether the cave sat incidentally inside a larger boundary marked for other reasons, I can't say. What I know is that for 2 years, the land was staked and patrolled, and the cave stayed undisturbed. And within a week of ABI's trucks pulling away, I went in with a headlamp and 30 feet of rope, because the access seemed open. The access had opened. That part was accurate. What I hadn't thought through was that the access opening was a change in my situation and not in anything else's. Whatever was in that cave had been there before ABI arrived. It was still there after they left. The change in enforcement wasn't a change in its circumstances at all. It was a change in mine. I walked back down the ridge at a normal pace. 40 minutes, the same trail. For the first quarter mile, I had a steady level sensation of something behind me at a fixed distance. I turned around twice. The tree line was still. The hillside was quiet. The sounds were ordinary morning sounds. The pressure held a constant level the whole quarter mile and then began easing by degrees, slow enough that there was no distinct movement where it stopped. And by the time I hit the flat of the Halverson property, it was gone. I looked back once at the property line. The hillside sat at the mid-morning light, unchanged. I walked to the truck. I sat in the cab for a while with the engine off. Old coffee smell from the cup in the holder, warm vinyl from the sun through the windshield, a crow somewhere across the field arguing with something. Normal sounds, normal distances, everything running at the pace it was supposed to. My left leg had a low tremor in the quadricep from sustained tension. I stretched it against the floorboard and waited for it to pass. While I was doing that, I noticed the scrape on my right forearm. Thin, running from near the elbow towards the wrist, from catching the wall clearing the entrance slot. I hadn't felt it happen. It had bled a little and dried, and there was limestone grit in it that I needed to wash out. I checked the boot heel. The drag mark was there, clear in the dirt on the left sole, the kind of mark a skid leaves when something pulls your foot in one direction and your weight resists it. Real. Physical. Evidence of a force applied by something that had been within arm's reach while I was lying flat in the passage for close to a minute, and had made no sound and given no indication of its presence until it chose to. The cave was still up there. That kept surfacing. Still in the same hillside, still accessible, still looking from the outside exactly like what it was. A crack in a limestone shelf that most people would step over without registering it. I checked the GPS coordinates when I got back to my truck, for a reason I couldn't have explained precisely. I drove back towards Coldwater Junction with the radio off. I've been back to the property once since then. I parked, looked up at that ridge for a while, and drove away. I didn't go as far as the tree line. The thing I keep coming back to is the timing of the grab. I made the decision to leave. I turned around and climbed the slope and got through the entrance passage and made it to the open air. All of that time was mine. Decisions I made, executed under my own direction, even through the stretch where the space had stopped behaving predictably. I left because I chose to leave. And then, something grabbed my ankle at 8 inches and let go. two different things. I want to keep them separate because collapsing them would mean losing something that seems like it matters. The decision was mine. The permission was something else's. They both happened inside the same second. ABI was on that land for 2 years. Whatever they knew or didn't know, the cave sat inside their boundary and the thing in it stayed undisturbed alongside it. Then the equipment pulled out and the land went up. And I was the first person to go in. First contact, in whatever sense that phrase applies here. I don't think I was lucky. I don't have much evidence that luck was a significant factor in how I got out of that cave. What I have is the sequence. It watched. It tested. It adjusted. It concluded. It put one hand on my ankle at the moment of maximum significance. When I was out. When I had made it. When the outcome was settled. And it pulled me back 8 inches to make sure I understood that the outcome had already been a decision. And not mine. Then it let go. I think about those days, and I've gotten careful about the distinction.